It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, they're back from their virtual visit to Microsoft's big developer conference Build, and there is a ton to talk about. Great news for developers, for Linux users. There's a new package manager for Windows. I'm very excited about that. For Microsoft 365 users, the Fluid framework. I can go on and on, but you know what? We're going to do it all next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check it out at lastpass.com/twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 673, recorded Wednesday, May 20th, 2020. The Case of the Adolescent Numismatist. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Prepare for the unexpected in your business with LastPass, trusted by over 17 million users and 61,000 businesses worldwide. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by IT Pro TV. Learn the ins and outs of IT careers and get the most up-to-date training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/windows for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription. Use the code WW30 at checkout. It's time for Microsoft Build, Windows Weekly Edition. Here we are with a very, very famous Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com, Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, equally notorious. Together they are the core.
No.
The kernel.
The kernel.
Right. The kernel of Windows.
I'll say kernel. Yep. So Build is on. Now, are we interrupting anything important that you wanted to see or...
No. I think the Scott Goo thing was replaying when this started.
Okay. Yeah, we missed that. We streamed Satya Nadella's RGV to CW speech.
That cleverly hidden message.
What was that, by the way?
Oh, I don't even know. We found out before the end of our stream. It's base 64 for devs. It's his way of saying developers, developers, developers.
I wouldn't give him personal credit for that, but yes.
It was clever. I thought that was clever. Yeah. Do you think somebody said, Mr. Nadella, if you put RGV to CW behind you, the world,
it's an Easter egg. Cool.
It will be super cool.
Yeah. I don't think he even knew about it. I think they just said, hey, or stand here. Read that.
You don't think that's his house? Was that his house?
It looked like a set.
That's a good question. I think a lot of those were sets.
It doesn't look like that all the time. I can tell you that.
Well, and then we watched the Imagine Cup, which was better, frankly. Because it didn't have, I don't know, I just felt a little less awkward.
Actually, I'll tell you why it was better.
Why?
It was the reason everything was better. Because everything was held to 20 to 30 minutes.
Yes, short.
Honestly, that made it better.
Yeah.
Just get to the point.
I'll agree with you on that.
You know?
Yeah.
I know. Keep things moving. That's always good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I would have changed the order of things a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me just... So we watched Scott Hanselman, and I had a blast with that because he's sitting in his clear with his own computer. And he loves, you know, he's a real geek. And so he loved playing and pushing all the buttons. And it was really cool. He had a stream deck. We caught the stream deck. And he's making the lights behind him change colors. And, you know, he's just.
And why does he have one of these in his house, you ask? Because
he's a podcaster. That's why.
Okay.
Didn't all his kids speak a little view in the door or something, too?
Yeah, and his was more natural than the Panos Panay faux.
Every time a child appeared on any video, it was very obviously not
staged.
Natural.
Yeah, stage.
And that was the one thing. You got to give them credit for pulling this thing off. It was awesome overall.
I thought they did great.
I think the stuff they did from home is, I think it's an interesting insight. I think I said this to Brad Mehdi this morning. You know, it's really interesting. You see the executives like Scott Goo or Satya Nadella, whoever, and they're these in their, you know, mansions or whatever. And then there's like these, it's like this guy or woman who works on Edge or this person who, you know, kind of a 20 something, and they're in like a an apartment.
I loved it.
You know, with nothing.
It was real. It was genuine. I really loved
it. That stuff was really genuine. Yeah.
I thought it was really, really great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Now, we had to tune out before Scott. In fact, we tuned out. We watched most of Hanselman's piece, but we stopped when he started doing .NET. As soon as it went to Visual Studio, I like the VS Code stuff, of course.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been told I'm going to be bumped ahead in the line on that cool, you know, what do they call it? I love it. Anyway, there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. Holy cow! Let's get started. So, Build continue. It finishes today. It's only a 2-day event. Mm-hmm. It's also
tomorrow's like reruns of content. So if you miss anything, you can watch tomorrow.
But that's one thing I love about this is that nobody had to pay for it, and everybody was invited.
And look, no one is saying this exactly this way. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of speculation around someday in the future that Microsoft and other companies will have these in-person conferences. Yes.
Yes.
But how will this experience impact what those things look like? Because in the very near future and then in the future going, you know, forever maybe, there are just going to be people who don't want to come physically and be around that many people.
Right. Yeah. You've spoiled us.
Will they? Yeah. So will they do something like this plus the live event?
Yes, because there are still people who want to get together.
Oh, you missed that part, right?
Yeah.
No, of course. But I mean, you know, like this really ties into what they were saying about Teams as long ago as, you know, February, which sounds like 3 years ago now. But when this work at home thing first started, I think it was, I don't want to say it, it doesn't matter. I don't want to use the name wrong, but one of the corporate vice presidents for Microsoft was saying, look, this is going to change work forever. It is not a temporary thing. Mm. And so if you think about
Jared Spataro. Jared Spataro.
Probably. I can't remember which one it was, but probably Jared Spataro. Yeah. So I just didn't want to get it wrong. But, you know, the idea is that, look, in the future, we will have these meetings and they'll be in person. But the capabilities of Microsoft Teams allows you to record those meetings. It allows people to come in remotely while it's live. For people who watch it later or even live, there'll be live translations of the language. There'll be automatic textual display of what's being said. You know, there are like all these advantages to doing it both ways at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think you could apply that to the conference situation.
Damn. And you got to figure when they're looking at expenses, the expense of doing Build this way versus the expense of having everybody come to Seattle, renting the convention center, all the food, right? I mean, you have to look at that if you're weighing this.
But they can't just cut it off. Like, in other words,
no.
Maybe, you know, I don't know what the attendance level at Build was, 5,000-6,000, something like that, probably.
About that.
Yeah, so maybe in the future, it's, you know, 2 years from now or something, it's 2,000 people want to show up. Mm-hmm. So maybe they can book a smaller venue, but maybe they can do this online component where it's live.
Yeah.
And they repeat sessions like they're doing for different time zones, and people can watch these things from home or at work or whatever the situation is, you know?
Yeah. I think that'd be cool.
That sounds great.
You know? And you know what worked this week, and I was worried about this, was how would they hold up under the load of all the people coming in and talking in the stream and watching the stream. And most, I haven't seen many people complain about it going down. Very few. Very, very few.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't even aware of any. So that's good.
Yeah. So that was a good test of how this would all work. For sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, it was great. Obviously, I mean, the leading news was the Xbox Game Pass thing.
So No, definitely.
That was like really top of mind.
So the first thing was snuck in by Satya Nadella. He just mentioned Project Reunion. Just kind of threw that in. And my little ears pricked up. And after the pricking went away, I Googled it. And I guess this, tell us what this is. This sounds like a way to get people off of Win32 and, you know, PWA or whatever it is, WPA.
No. I mean, so before we go into what it is exactly.
Okay.
I think Mary Jo might want to provide a little background on this because.
Yeah.
With the
idea.
Exception of the name and then, of course, the details and the fact that it's now available in a preview people can actually use. The groundwork for this stuff was laid last year.
It was.
Had you been talking about this and I just missed it?
So yeah, well, we didn't know we didn't know it was going to be called Reunion, right? But last year at Build, I got to talk to Kevin Gallo, who heads up the developer platform at Microsoft. And at that point, I just was like, so what's going on with UWP? Is it dead? Like, what's going on with the store? Is it dead? And at that time, he laid out the whole vision for Project Reunion, although we didn't know it was going to be called that. You know, he said, we'd like to get to this place where we just have Windows apps and it's not UWP or Win32. We'd like to bring those two things together, right? We'd like to take elements of the platform that are embedded in the OS and get them out of the OS and make it something so wherever you are, whatever kind of app you're developing in whatever language, you could use the same set of components and you're not tied to the store and you're not tied to a certain model and it will just work. So he said that was the goal, right?
What's not to love?
I know.
But so I interpret it as, look, you've got Microsoft has all this legacy stuff. Win32 is terrible. It's a security flaw. It's a reliability flaw. But
performance problems.
There's tens and hundreds of thousands of seats requiring it in the business world. And then this, you know, I think it's safe to say the UWP Windows Store stuff was kind of terrible.
It completely failed.
But Microsoft doesn't want to kill legacy. What they really want is everybody who wrote Win32 apps and UWP apps to rewrite them for the modern platform, right? That's their real goal.
I could spend 2 hours on this.
We got all the time in the world.
But this is so central to everything that I care about. So first of all, when we say Win32, I think a lot of people misunderstand that. When Microsoft says Win32, they mean it a little more broadly. And Win32 is, I think, what Leo was referring to, which is, you know, this originally C-based API that was terrible, and it was terrible. Mm-hmm. And you would write these long-winded windows. It was terrible.
And it's the source of a lot of security flaws, a lot.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Huge number.
Microsoft has been working to build on top of that since the early 1990s, or late 1980s even. I mean, Visual Basic is something that is on top of classic Visual Basic. It was something on top of Win32. The Microsoft Foundation classes, C++ classes built on top of Win32. In the .NET world, we had Windows Forms, 2001 or 2, whatever year that was. And then we had Windows Presentation Foundation, 2006, 2007, whatever. The thing that we call UWP today started off as that Metro mobile app environment from Windows 8. Microsoft could have taken the Windows Phone environment and brought it inside of Windows, but they chose to make something else that was very similar and not the same and not compatible, and we'll never understand that, but whatever. If you look at Windows development today, if you're a UWP developer, UWP doesn't make a lot of sense because it's a mobile app development environment. And it's designed to run cross-platform within the Microsoft ecosystem. So originally on phone, PC, HoloLens, Xbox, Surface Hub, Windows IoT. And, you know, it kind of creates this least common denominator kind of app. So over the past couple of years, they've tried to improve it for desktop development. And honestly, that's the one part of UWP they kind of got right, like the user experience stuff there is pretty good. So when I was developing that different versions of that app, like the one thing I really like about the UWP stuff is the UI, UX, whatever you want to call that. So Project Reunion first there's two aspects to it. First, they're decoupling developer technologies from specific versions of Windows. And you see that in different ways. But in the UWP world, what that means is, say they add like a new control to UWP. You can't just use that anywhere in Windows 10. It's tied to a specific version of Windows 10 or newer. So it's just like the old days. Like if the API was, you know, new to Windows 7, you couldn't run it on Vista, you know, although they never should have done stuff like that to begin with, but whatever. So decoupling from version, ending fragmentation, that's a big deal. But they're also decoupling in this, to begin with, it's just UX, but decoupling the UWP UX from UWP. And making it available to all developers, basically, Win32 developers, meaning literally C++ developers, WinForms developers, WPF developers, and React Native developers will be able to use the UX parts of UWP, which is now called WinUI, starting with 3.0, on their apps. But then, you know, it gets a little complicated from there because Project Reunion is a way forward for UWP developers. So, you know, UWP gets a little stranded in this scenario, but, you know, today it's the only way you can develop an app on HoloLens. So if you want to, you know, target HoloLens, you got to use UWP. In the future, you'll use Project Reunion.
It isn't outdated. That's not the problem.
It didn't succeed on desktop is the problem. And desktop for Microsoft is the mass market, right? They don't have that mobile market. If phone existed and had succeeded, UWP would have made tons of sense because that would have been where all the emphasis was, and we could have justified that.
Right.
But when
right.
that thing failed, totally.
Because we forget sometimes, what does UWP stand for? Universal Windows Platform. The idea there was everything that had the Windows 10 core, you could write once and it would run mostly across all these platforms. But who did that, right? Like, who wrote an app that for Windows desktop that they wanted to run on a HoloLens?
Or on any of those platforms.
Xbox. Right.
Yeah. In other words, you imagine an app, right? So I keep talking about this one app I made, but like I have an app called .NET Pad. Is there any cause for me to port that to HoloLens or the Xbox? No,
of course not.
Or would I have brought it to phone if that was still a thing? No. So UWP is not, you know, it didn't, you know, technically it met the requirements of what they were looking for, but realistically speaking, there was just no cause for it.
Right.
So here's the weirdest thing. So Project Reunion, so they've decoupled things, right? Mm-hmm. If you go into Visual Studio, the next version of Visual Studio, and you're running on .NET 5, and you are creating a new app. Now, this is the thing, and not a lot of people are going to do this, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But you'll be able to do this. You can choose a WinUI app, and it could be a desktop-type app or a UWP-type app. If it's they could look identical because the XAML-based UI stuff will be the same. I could make a version of .NET Pad on either one of those if I wanted to. But if you chose the desktop version, it's technically a Win32 app, but the way you're writing it is using, I don't know, I want to say it's probably not managed, but it's a C#, it's a modern app. It's the UI stuff is the same stuff you would have done in UWP, but without any of the negatives of UWP. The negatives of UWP are that mobile lifecycle management, that your app could be in the background because you're doing something else and it literally turns off, you know, really desirable in a low memory mobile environment. Not super desirable on this workstation I'm using now.
Did you notice, by the way, they a couple places in their blog post about Reunion, they called and they said Win32, which we're now calling the Windows API.
No, I didn't see that. That's good.
Yeah, so they're like, let's not call it Win32, even though it's Win32, right? Windows. Yeah.
So Win32 was a weird name because on one hand, it's tarnished. I think, you know, people hear Win32 and they get really negative, you know, for the reasons Leo stated, which are accurate.
Yeah.
But the other part of it is they hear Win32 and they think it's like, is this 32-bit something? And
old and not modern, right?
Yeah, so it's not 32-bit. It's just the API.
It's actually 64-bit today.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is in other words, for a little while, they're like, we'll call this thing Win64. But Win32 has taken hold as a brand. And
Win64 implies that Win32 is the 32-bit version of Win64, which is not.
That's right.
We just kind of use it generically, right, to refer
it's
to...
It's both.
So then I don't mind the renaming because that fixes a misconception I had.
Yes.
And I imagine I'm not alone. I think
the Windows API is a good name for that.
Yeah.
The one thing they didn't say, though, and this is why I wanted... This is part of the reason I wanted Mary Jo to go over the background because she said exactly what I hoped she was going to say, which was, he said, we want to think of these things as Windows apps. Yes.
Yep.
They never said that this week. They didn't use that term. And I think that's the right term for these apps because
I think that's what they'll do. Yeah.
I hope that's you need to call
Reunion's
it.
Reunion's even going to work. It's even going to work on Windows 8.1 at some point in time. Like it's going to go that far back, they say. So the best way to call these apps is Windows apps, not Windows 10 apps, right?
Although
it's like the the right way to say is, and one day when you can run them on 10X, you want to just say the Windows apps, right? You don't want to say, is it 10X? Is it this? Is it that?
Yeah, you're right, first of all. And I, why you would want to run anything on Win81 is beyond me. But my understanding is both versions of Project Reunion apps, meaning a desktop or UWP variant, will work on Windows 8.1. Mm-hmm. They didn't say this a lot, but coming in 2021, Project, and probably in .NET 6, Project Reunion apps will also run on all those old Windows targets, HoloLens, Xbox, Surface Hub, IoT.
Will it? Yeah, it will.
Yep.
Because I asked about that, and they were very wishy washy. HoloLens?
I took screenshots of this because
I'm like, what about Windows IoT? What about HoloLens? What about Surface Hub? And they're like,
you can go back and watch the WinUI session, which was called.
So they did say that.
Yeah, they were very explicit about it. Yeah, but we don't. That's a little longer out. So for this year, what we're looking at is various preview releases of WinUI 3.0, which is what they're describing as the first component of Project Reunion. And then a final release, it's probably going to be early next year, but maybe by the end of the year.
I think they said today, early next year. I think they were hedging, and now today they're saying next year.
Their roadmap had a blank at the end of it, and I took that.
The bridge is out at the end of the road.
It's just dot, dot, dot.
And then it ended. And I was like, well, if they were going to do it this year, they would have.
That's pretty fun.
Here's the bigger use case for this. And to put this in context, you got to remember, Microsoft knew back in the Windows Vista timeframe, which, by the way, is when iPhone and mobile took off, and then in the Windows 7 timeframe, that no developers were doing anything new on Windows at that time. It was that long ago. And all the excitement and new app generation and stuff was happening on web and mobile, mostly mobile. Mm-hmm. And this has been might explain why they were so aggressive in Windows 8 with the weird mobile touch first stuff, because I think they felt like that was the only way they could get anybody to jump in. And you know, it didn't work, but that was the idea. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to excuse that era, but I feel like maybe that might explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and going back to what Leo said right up front, I mean, there are expectations when people see Windows in the workplace or at home or whatever, that they're going to run these certain kinds of apps. And those apps they're desktop apps. They just are. They're legacy apps. They're Photoshop, they're Office, they're web browsers. And there's a huge code base out in the world, or I should say multiple huge code bases written with different technologies, different frameworks, different languages from over the years. And to me, the very coolest part about this, and this is something I will do, is you can take an app written in Windows Forms or in WPF, and you can replace the user experience with a modern user experience that used to be tied to UWP, but is now available to everybody. You cannot do that today, because in preview one, it is broken. But it's enough there that you can see how it will work. And I wrote about that this morning. I spent hours on this last night with Raphael. And if you think about think about Notepad. Notepad is a simple, it's a one-window application. That's not technically true. Notepad also has an about box. It has a find and replace box. It has a font window that's part of the system, but I rewrote that. There's a color dialogue, et cetera. But those things are all of their day. They actually date back to Windows Forms. They're almost 20 years old. As the author of Notepad, or in my case, .NETpad, you could replace every window in that application with what's called a WinUI desktop window, right? So if you think about, like, if you have a project with all your different windows in it, you add a window. It's a new kind of window. You write the new UI. It's all using the new stuff. You get to use XAML. It's awesome. It looks beautiful. And then all of the buttons and controls and the menu items and all that stuff have event handlers on the background written in C# code. You just point to the event handlers you already wrote from, could have been 20 years ago. Theoretically, I'm not saying this will work, but theoretically it should work. You might have to make some changes, you know. But that's actually very exciting, because you can develop that thing in place. You can have the two UIs side by side. And when the new UI is working fully, you just turn off the old one, you know?
Yeah.
It's I think this is the bigger use case. I don't really think developers are going to come rushing to Windows to write new desktop applications today or new UWP applications. I just don't think that's happening.
No.
But I do think there are millions of apps out in the world, and that some of them will be, and many of them certainly would benefit from this transition or evolution or whatever to Project Reunion or we'll call it WinUI, whatever.
Yeah.
So
I agree. I feel like they've been, sorry to interrupt you. I feel like that's what they've been trying to do, right? For years. Remember the bridges, all those bridges they made? They were trying to get Win32 developers or other kinds of app developers, at, like at one point Android and Apple developers, to somehow bring their apps over to Windows. And once they kind of abandoned the bridges, then they were like, what about XAML Islands? What about this? What about that? What can we do to make you Win32 folks modernize your apps? So, you know,
we got to decompress what you just said, because you're right. But there's a lot going on there, too. So
I know.
One of the things I wrote yesterday is if you go back to 2003 and it's PDC and it's Longhorn and developers are trampling each other to hear Bill Gates talk about the future. And they talked about WinFX, they talked about Avalon, they talked about Indigo, they talked about WinFS.
Yeah.
And they said, this is awesome, it's all brand new, it's only going to be available in Longhorn. And everyone was like, well, hold on a second, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's an install base of like hundreds of millions of, at that time, Windows 9X, Windows 2000, Windows XP. You can't do that. And Microsoft actually backed off. That stuff was all renamed to .NET Framework 3.0, I think it was, to... Avalon became Windows Presentation Foundation. Indigo became Windows Communication Foundation. WinFS was still WinFS, but it was eventually canceled. But it was all backported to all of those other operating systems. So they actually did the right thing. They made everything available on all supported versions of Windows. But if you flash forward to Windows 8, 2012, when they started what we call UWP now, they said, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be new. They didn't really highlight the fact that it was all mobile-based, I don't believe, but whatever. It's only going to be available on Windows 8. And all the developers are like, what are you talking about? We get Windows Vista. We got Windows 7. Well, you can't do that.
Yep.
And Microsoft didn't back down that time. And that was the problem. So all those existing apps out in the world couldn't come forward to UWP. You would have to write them over again. That's why it failed. That's part of the reason it failed. And so the bridges were like a bone thrown belatedly to those guys by saying, okay, look, we get it. You're not going to adopt UWP. We'll at least let you bring your code forward into the store. And you won't have to make it a UWP app. And I don't know. That didn't go too well either, did it?
No, you know? It didn't. No. Mm-mm. In fact, you know, they didn't really, I don't think, you watched the sessions more than I did on this, but I don't think they said anything about the store. And what Kevin Gallo said to me last year about the store was, you know what, the store is going to stick around for people who want to put their apps in the store. And if you don't, we're going to let you get around that and not have to go through the store. And when I asked again this year about that, this, it sounds like that's still the thinking, right?
As always, you're right. Like everything you just said is correct.
Hey, woo.
and this is the one area where I don't feel that I applaud them for the clarity that they provided on Project Reunion. This is the other half of the story, and they've been very unclear on this. So here's my understanding based on things people have said as a side, based on my discussions with Raphael, who is actually very knowledgeable about this particular topic. The one thing they did announce this week was a new Windows Package Manager. It's kind of like a chocolatey type tool.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too.
It's a command line system. It seems to be aimed mostly at developers. What he's saying is that the Windows Store will persist, but it will become a front end for this. So the back end catalog for this new package manager and for the store will be exactly the same set of apps. They will even add something to the store where you can maintain a collection of apps that you always want to install. It will be like a graphical front end to this thing that you do via command line. Now we're going to see, Vahedi has already written a web-based tool that does exactly this. It's a graphical front end to a command line environment, a scripting environment. So yes, I don't know why they couldn't have just said this, but I believe that this is the answer to that second half of the equation, that The story's going to continue. It's not been a huge success. But, it's nice for normal people who want to go and click around and find the things. Or maybe you've already downloaded apps in the past and you can go see your library and say, yep, I want that and that and that.
Can I ask you a package manager question?
I don't know too much about it, but you can try.
Well, I know nothing about it. So here we go. The way you just described it as having the store as the front end to the package manager. What if you're an app vendor who doesn't want to put your app in the store? It'll still be able to be called up through the package manager, even if it's not in the store.
That I'm not 100%
sure of. I'm sure that's the case.
It has to be, right?
Yeah, but they didn't say that. Yeah, this package manager.
I just don't know.
Will have sources. This is how it works in Linux, and it works in Mac as well. It'll have places that it goes. In Linux, usually that's a number of places. On the Mac, it's with Brew, it's one place where it says, what packages can I install?
Right.
And so before you see if you have updates, you say, download the latest packages. Then you can check and see if you have updates. That's a completely command line driven thing. Okay. On the Mac, because you do have GUI apps, there is a program you can download called MAS that will let you download stuff from the Mac store. It's kind of an ugly interface. I'm guessing it's more the integration with Windows is much tighter. And it may even be that the sources list for the package manager for WinGet is the store.
Right, right.
So it's unknown whether it would have to have an
– I believe that's true.
Yeah, that makes sense. But would it then have to have a page – in the store, maybe that would be an interesting way to do it. It's not how
honestly
it's done in the real world.
If it's something that could be generated automatically, I could actually see Microsoft just doing this.
It's like a document. Think of it as a documentation page. Why not?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It's funny. I've been writing a review of a Dell XPS 13 laptop, and I obviously have a lot of familiarity with how things work on. Laptops by different vendors. So if you have a Surface, for example, all of your updates go through Windows Update. That's the nicest way to do it. But a lot of times PC makers have their own app for updates and for support and for other things. So recently the laptop I usually use is an HP EliteBook 1040, which I love. But the HP support app, if they say you get some updates, you have to update the audio driver, the sound, the video drive, whatever it is. So you go through the little list, you say yes to everything, and then it actually runs the installers for each one of the things, and you have to click through the installers, and it's like, what is this? Like, this is like, why would I have to do this?
I know. It takes forever, right?
So on the Dell laptop, they have a similar program, and it says, hey, you got to update the audio driver, the video driver, whatever, the BIOS. It just does it all in the background. It's scripted. It's like the way it should be. And to me, that's maybe the way to think of this package manager versus the store. You could go into the store and you could be like, okay, I want this, I want this, I want this, But with the package manager, you're basically saying, like, look, I have this list of apps. I always want to install this on a new computer. I want it to be the latest version of that app.
And then
once it's installed, I want you to keep it up to date.
Every other operating system has this already. And we've talked before about Chocolaty, and they even mentioned Chocolaty and said they might integrate with Chocolaty, which is a third-party package manager for Windows.
Yeah.
It's so nice. Mm-hmm. It's like Ansible or something. It lets you automate your build. So I have,
I think you could see why a business would want this
rather than
the Windows store.
You go manually check, boom, boom. It's crazy. It's the
stupidest thing. Yeah, exactly. So, and I know there are, I can't think of the name. There was one like 9X or something or 9 or there are different third-party package managers.
Nix.
Is it Nix?
NIX, yeah.
Something like that. But you can see what the need is. And I honestly, the funny thing is, like, this is the type of thing, like, developers or power users, they would be into this. This speaks to Microsoft's core market. This is the best thing for businesses, you're right. Like, anyway, to go back to what Mary Jo said originally, they were not clear on this. There were little tidbits here and there. And especially if you watch the session for the package manager. I think this is a story that's unfolding. So I remember when Kevin Gallo was talking about the future last year, it was a little, we're going to figure out a way to get store apps distributed outside of the store.
Yep.
While maintaining the safety and security and reliability. That's is honestly is the best part about the store. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay, so what's that way? You know, and I think so, I think they're getting there, you know.
I know a little more about that now.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Nine Night. That's what Nine Night. Thank you.
I knew it was
So when he said that about the apps having a trusted model so that if you didn't want to get them through the store, you could trust that they were okay. This is where 10X comes in, right? With the containers. Right. And that's when that's going to happen is that from what I'm hearing. It's not connected to reunion per se, but it's more when we have 10X available and we have all these different container models, that's when you'll have the trusted model for Win32 apps because there's a Win32 container.
Oh, I got you. Okay. So in other words, they're doing it at kind of the macro level rather than each individual app. So like we're just going to.
Yeah.
Win32 is this insane asylum. We're going to board the doors.
Exactly. We're going to put you in a box. You want,
and it's not going to affect
you can
the
do
rest
whatever.
Of the
Right. And yeah, then you, because you're in a little safe space, you'll be okay. It makes sense in a way, right? Yeah, it does.
Anyway, so just to kind of go back to make sure, I've gotten a lot of crap over the past year for this UWP is dead stuff. People need to understand, like, this is not a message I invented. I mean, and this, you know, in the sense that UWP, of course, it continues. You can't just yank the thing off the earth. I mean, and if you wanted to, you could create a Project Reunion slash, you know, WinUI/UWP app. I don't think anyone will, but you could if you wanted to. The point of the is dead part is that there was this other future, and we're seeing it now. And they knew, Microsoft knew, that UWP had failed, and they had to move past it. And I think it's not about – there is stuff in UWP that's valuable. And there will be further components from UWP that get pulled into Project Reunion and decoupled from the operating system and from specific versions of the operating system. And this is all really good news.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. And they're going to do it in public.
Like the crow of death of UWP. Like, I want this to be good. And
it's great they're doing it on GitHub, right? This is great. Yeah. It's like out in the open. People can talk about what they'd like to see happen. It's not like going to be this secret thing where they throw it over the transom and they're like, here, we decoupled some more stuff from your operating system. It's going to be based on what people need and want, and they're going to have discussions about it. Right. So that's good. Good news.
And I am very curious to see. I don't know when it will be, 2-3 months down the road, 6 months, whatever it is. But at some point, there will be an understanding of what it is that developers have asked for Microsoft to bring into Project Reunion from UWP. And I'm very curious to know what that is because, like I said, I'm my very limited experience. I'm not a professional developer, obviously, but the UX stuff in UWP is fantastic. And and I say that from the perspective of a desktop developer. The problem with creating an app you're only going to run on desktop in UWP is that you keep getting you keep running into these blockers because the back end stuff is so lousy for desktop development. So to me, this is like the ideal situation. I love like the C#.NET world, WPF in particular, fantastic. But I can put this modern UI on top of it? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Good. What do you think of the WebView 2 part of the Project Reunion?
I don't know as much about that because remember when probably as long ago as when they first announced they were moving to Chromium. Part of the problem with that was they have this web view component. They still have it from classic legacy Edge. It was very powerful because it was their own thing. But they said, when we move to Chromium, we're going to lose a bunch of functionality. And for that reason, we're not going to be able to say to people, look, if you did a web view based application, you should move forward to WebView 2.0. Only some of you will be able to do that because you're going to lose functionality. So what I don't know is if that story has changed. So with I don't know how this fits in exactly, but they're calling WebView 2 like the second Project Reunion component. I think that was just a convenience to make it look like the
oh, really?
It was. But yeah, I don't know. I don't quite get that. But but whatever. It's okay. You can make a modern app and you can base it on this WebView. But my understanding, and this is where I could be wrong, is that WebView 2 is, you know, less powerful for lack of a better term, than the original WebView, because it's not literally part of the operating system. It's, you know, an outside web component. So maybe that's changed. That's the thing. I haven't looked as I've been. By the way, there's one thing we don't have in the notes, and I'll just, because you mentioned WebView. The third thing that I think needs more attention is something called, I think it's called Project MAUI.
Which MAUI. Yep.
Yeah, I think I just haven't had time to look at this, but I believe what it is basically the next version of Xamarin Forms. And it is a .NET 5 based way to write true cross-platform compatible apps across Windows, Android, and iOS using what I believe will be the future of Xamarin. And that's almost everything I know about it. So just haven't had a chance yet, but I think that's what that is.
Yeah. I think the other thing to know about it is it sounds like .NET 5 is not going to be the be all end all thing that everybody thought. And .NET 6 is where a lot of this kind of full cross-platform compatibility will show up. Right. So that's what they're tying. When they're saying what's next for Xamarin and Forms, it sounds like that's going to be .NET 6 from what I can tell. Yep.
Okay. That makes sense because the non-Windows desktop parts of WinUI / Project Reunion, in other words, when that stuff works on other platforms, in this case meaning Xbox, HoloLens, Surface Hub, IoT, is also .NET 6. So I think maybe .NET 5 is going to be a big deal for two things. I mean, for Windows and for the web, I think ASP.NET.
Yep.
And just for the fact that this will be the version that, it's kind of like the Windows XP of .NET. It's going to combine these two worlds, the legacy .NET framework and then the new .NET core.
.NET 5 is November, right? .NET 6 will be next year. And then I saw some people saying, a lot of people were asking, what's the relationship between MAUI and Reunion? And I saw some people saying, at some point, maybe they can layer on top of each other, but that's not anything happening in the near term.
It's impossible with developer topics not to keep going back in time. But, someone, I think it was you, had said earlier, that's why they called it the universal Windows platform. In other words, that it's universal across all of the Microsoft platforms.
Windows.
And the pedantics, like developers would say, well, it's not truly universal unless it runs on Android and iOS, And I have to say, aside from the pedantic part of that, I mean, I always kind of did wonder why they didn't bring UWP to Android at the very least. It seems like it would have been kind of an obvious thing to do. But of course, Xamarin's over there sort of providing that. If you ever tried today to write a Xamarin Forms app that ran on Windows 10, Android, and iOS, you would want to kill yourself. It's terrible. But it exists. Like, you could do that if you wanted to. But the Xamarin Forms thing, as far as Windows is concerned, it's not as capable as UWP, and there's no way that's ever a compliment. So I do agree. I mean, they have this kind of declarative XML-based UI language, XAML. Why couldn't you? They have. They already Xamarin brought it to Android and iOS. I mean, why?
Right.
Why couldn't you combine these things? I mean, I that might be the natural future of all of this stuff. I don't know, but they're not talking about that. But But yeah, it's certainly possible. Look, I just want to add. It's broken today, but I desperately want to just see. I've written an app. I'm going to put this new UI on top of it. I would just want to see that work, I don't know when that's going to work, but maybe a month or two.
Yeah.
It'll be a good day.
A good
It'll
day.
Be a good day.
It'll be a good, good day.
Yep.
All right. Well, you've made this all so clear. So thank you. But Reunion a big deal? If it lives up to its promise.
That's the problem, Leo, right? So again, you keep going back in time. Imagine if, I'd said this before, it's 2012 and Windows 8 is coming out. And Windows 8 is Windows 7, but with a flatter new UI. And they brought in the Windows Phone app model. You know, they didn't make a new one. They just, you can run the Windows Phone apps on here. We're going to extend those APIs so they make sense, full screen, et cetera, et cetera. Remember Windows Phone had those panoramic experiences? Mm. You could flip through the screens. Remember? Mm-hmm. I always thought that would look great on a monitor. You just put it, it'd be all on one screen. Mm. Anyway, they didn't do it. But if they had done it, would that have changed anything? I mean, if Microsoft did today what they're doing today, if they had done it 5 years ago when Windows 10 came out, or if they had done it, 8 years ago when Windows 8 came out, would it really have made a difference? Mm. I, if I'm being honest with myself, probably not. Probably not. I'm glad they're doing it. It's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly the right thing to do for the backward compatibility stuff, because I think one of the big errors that Microsoft made was they ignored the needs of their developer base for too long and never gave them a way forward. When they did UWP, they said, nope, you got to start over. And I think that really just turned everyone off.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So they don't want to do that again.
No.
I think they're writing the mistakes that they made. Yeah. I mean,
I also think
we're going to see a gen of apps, you know.
A lot of what I saw, you know, of course, I saw the early part where there was a lot of GitHub. But a lot of what I saw was very much aimed at the, not just the developer, but the open source developer. And even having a Winget package manager, you know, and tied with LSW, or WSL rather, and the Windows kernel and Linux kernel in Windows, all of that. And that's the part I saw was making any open source developer feel more comfortable. Like, well, yeah, I can use this.
Yeah, Leo knows this better than anybody. If you use a Mac, what you're using is a Unix system. It has all that command line functionality. It's very friendly for a certain class of developer. The Linux world obviously has that as well, and Microsoft has. They're always going to, we do risk a problem where, you know, you give and you give and you give and people keep asking for more. You know, we get these things where people like, well, it's only a matter of time before Windows is based on a Linux kernel, or why don't we just get rid of Windows?
That's me.
I'm the one who's saying that.
No, I know.
This
is the problem that they have. I tuned out as soon as Scott Hanselman started saying, now let's talk about .NET. And Visual Studio, you have to keep both sides happy.
You do. But you have to. They want Windows to be the place for people to develop whatever they're developing for.
Those .NET apps will run anywhere now. That's the entire point of .NET 5, .NET Core.
.NET 5
now.
And .NET 6, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. So, Leo, don't be turned off by .NET. Yeah. I mean, .NET is Microsoft's cross-platform API now. It was birthed as a completely different and terrible thing. We can all agree to that.
Yep.
But and if they could have done anything over again, I bet they would have started right there, because that could have changed the world if .NET in 2002 or whatever year that was had come out as a cross-platform, I know they talked about cross-platform, but a truly cross-platform.
And that's what Zimian was, and then Xamarin, and that's why they hired Miguel and all that. And that, by the way,
you know, like how
who worked on that is now the CEO at GitHub.
I know.
So
that's right.
The stuff they made at Xamarin.
Yeah.
You know,
the way 132, you have this idea of what is 132, and now they're trying to change that to the Windows API. .NET framework has this connotation in your head, but that's changing to .NET, plain old .NET now, right?
Framework. So the connotation there is it's like middleware crap that you have to update constantly, and you don't even know what it does. You know, it's got this awful
reputation.
I don't know why I keep saying this. Mary Jo is right again, but you know, Windows API is Windows, and .NET is everything. And I think that's an important distinction, because .NET is a way for C# developers to put their code anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, and .NET is. Look, Don, it's plumbing. It's not exciting and you know, interesting. It's you can talk about, if you switch from .NET Framework 4.7 or whatever it is to .NET Core 3.1 or .NET 5, you're going to see a 17% performance improvement on desktop or some nonsense, whatever. Yeah, whatever. But the real point of it is to make it open source and cross platform. And that's Microsoft today. And I think the broader developer story is they want Windows to be the best place for developers to work while they write apps that might run in the web, might run on a mobile platform that Microsoft doesn't control. And they don't care. You know, they want this to be the best place for what those people are doing. It's not about Windows turning into Linux. It's about Windows providing the same tools and workflows that developers get today on Linux and macOS.
Yeah, and that's great. I'm thrilled to see it.
Yeah.
So Late Memo just came in the chat room and he said, did anything happen today with Microsoft? Can you repeat everything? Press the rewind button and it's all actually we're just beginning because there's still Windows stuff, Microsoft 365, there's Edge, and Microsoft now has the fifth fastest supercomputer in the world. We're going to talk about that. There's a lot of interesting stuff. I loved it that they gave that Satya Nadella gave a big plug to folding at home. I thought that was kind of cool. So there's lots more to talk about. Build is big this year, and I frankly think it should be like this all the time because I got to go to Build, a little bit.
Well, yeah, but even from just a focus perspective, there was a lot of news about Azure. I can't stress enough how little I care about Azure, but whatever. One of the issues for me for the past couple of years has been going to Build and having this junk wave over me that I just don't care about, and I'm trying to pluck out the little tidbits about Windows that I do care about. And this show, Windows was well represented. And I really appreciate that. I feel like it probably hasn't been as long as it feels like, but it just hasn't been like that. So that was nice.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
There was still a lot of Azure. But the good part with online is you can pick and choose, right? You can be like, yeah, I want to watch that. Nope, don't care about that.
No. There definitely was more Windows news
Windows there was. News.
Yeah, it's been really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Cool. Let's take a little break. Come back. We got more to talk about. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're breaking down the Build. But first, a word from LastPass, our sponsor. They sponsored our coverage of the keynote yesterday. They sponsor our studio, as you can see in our special studio shot. They are also a great password manager that I've been using for a decade now. It's kind of amazing that it's been around for a decade. They also are great for business, and that's what we use. And now with businesses sending workers home, I don't know about you, but that's a little bit of a concern, a little red flag up for me, because here they are. They're now at home, and they're logging in, how securely, I don't know, to all of our most important resources, our websites, our banking. And actually, we want people to work from home. We want them to keep working from home. So that's why we use LastPass. LastPass lets you plan for the unexpected, like a bunch of your employees leaving the site. And it can be deployed quickly in the midst of any event to make sure your business keeps running smoothly, to make sure every login is secure, and without making it less convenient for your employees. Because as you probably know, if you have a company, if it's inconvenient, they will find ways to circumvent it. One of the reasons I love single sign-on, and LastPass has more than 1,200 single sign-on apps they support, is it's as simple as pushing a button on your phone to say, yeah, that's me, I'm logging in. And while that's so much more easy for the employees than typing in a password, it's also more secure than typing in a password. So I think SSO is fantastic. Of course, they still we still deal with passwords like crazy. And LastPass's enterprise password management is exactly what you want. IT can oversee, knows exactly who's using which passwords where. You can have enforceable policies about the minimum requirements for your MasterPass. You can require two-factor, which we do. All the employees have to use two-factor on their LastPass. And more than it goes beyond two-factor, it goes with multi-factor because they'll also use things like Touch ID, Fingerprint ID, even things like contextual things like geolocation to make sure that employee is the right person authorized to access that resource. And just to reassure you, LastPass does it right. They never send your master password anywhere. They don't store it. You can't get it back from them if you lose it. They do have a password recovery system, but they don't store it. They don't send it. And your data is never decrypted anywhere but on device, on your computer, on your laptop, your mobile, your pad, your tablet. And that's nice because it means for me it's an additional secure store. It's somewhere I could put more than just passwords, passports, driver's licenses, social security numbers. I know that's secure and only I have access to it. Encryption happens exclusively at the device level. Only users can decrypt. And it's using AES 256, so it's really strong encryption. The workflow stays seamless, but the passwords stay secure, and that's what you want. Also makes it easy to share passwords, even when employees are in their individual homes. Because you don't share it by calling them or writing a post-it note. It's actually shared through LastPass, so it's really convenient. And there's an offline mode for both password management and multi-factor authentication. That's important because your employees are going home. They might have spotty internet. You're no longer in control of all of that. LastPass helps make remote work simple. I want you to try it. If you're not using it at home, if you're not using it at the office, you got to go to LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. By the way, we did a great event last week with Steve Gibson, Jerry Buchelt, who's the CISO at LogMeIn, LastPass's parent company, and my friend Andrew Keene talking about the future of authentication, the future of digital identity. Fascinating stuff. That's at our Twit feeds. Well, it's on twit.tv. You can find it, but you can also get it on YouTube, and it's well worth watching. We thank LastPass for putting that together, too. All right, back to the show we go. Is there Windows news?
No.
So I thought the big one was WSL, Windows Subsystem for Linux, can now do GUI, and they showed the GIMP, the GNU Image Processor.
Yeah, but that's not available today, I don't think.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know, but that's huge because
that is huge.
People have hacked around it. You know, originally it was just command line. People figured out how to get X-Window running and, you know, figured out how to get GUIs running. But the fact that that'll be officially supported means you have now, that's really kind of surprising. It means you can run any Linux application on Windows.
So maybe, I feel like you would know more about this. What would be the Linux app that we like?
Oh, there's tons of stuff. Right.
Is it developed GPU intensive, right?
They're going to use GPU too. By the way,
I mean, I'm literally curious. Like, what's the
truth? Is most things like GIMP, there's a Windows version. Blender, there's a Windows version. So most Linux apps, GUI apps, they've made a Windows version available, but not all. So there are, you know, there are some really good, for instance, if you don't want to use Photoshop, you don't want to pay for Photoshop, open source free Photoshop clones. There's at least four that I've used on Linux that would be great on Windows.
Okay.
So there are definitely applications. I mean, this will be interesting, I think. By the way, it works on Windows Home now, too.
Yeah, right.
Right. But we have to wait for Windows 2004, right?
Okay,
because that's where WSL2 gets built in. Yeah.
But that's going to be big, I think.
Yeah, that'll be soon, like maybe next week even.
I want to see Linux apps in the Windows Store. That's when we'll know. Actually, you already do, right? You can
be in the Windows Package Manager.
Yeah.
Or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
but both they also talked about GPU intensive workloads coming to WSL2, and they mentioned specifically things like parallel computation and ML and AI models, right? So, right.
And that's why they did their own kernel.
That's
because
coming soon.
Terrible emulation.
Yep. So yeah, there was a lot of WSL stuff, and you know what was interesting? I was watching Twitter when they were talking about all that. People are very excited about that. Like very, very excited. I think again, it's the developer community, right? It's people who a lot of them have been using Macs and Linux boxes to develop, and now they're like, oh, I have a Windows box, can use WSL too.
I'm gonna add a WSL chat. It's not just WSL, but where is it? I'm adding a WSL chapter to the book.
You are? Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
You gonna put a little penguin hat on when you work on that chapter?
I'm going to cover it. Yeah. Hyper-V and Windows Sandbox too. But anyway, yeah. But
good.
WSL.
Good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then the other thing they were excited, Windows Terminal 1.0 being generally available. People were really like cranked about it. I was like, wow.
And I don't understand why they don't just replace whatever command line environments, the CMD and PowerShell. They should just, this is it. Just does everything. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Do you make yours all fancy with special backgrounds and fonts and stuff?
No, I mean, look, it's like the stuff you get on the Mac OS already. You can, you know, do the
customize.
Data who was that? The woman who had like the nine yeah,
the crazy
cat and
the bombing.
Kayla Cinnamon. Kayla Cinnamon.
Kayla, yeah. That's right. Wow, was that crazy?
Cinnamon is the an excellent name for a developer.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
But obviously, that's not her terminal background. But it's, you know, they're showing off.
Yeah, no, do it. It's just showing it, showing off yeah. what you can do. I think all that the theming stuff is awesome. Yeah. Translucency, all that stuff. It's just the ability to run different environments inside of different tabs and switch back and forth. It's just it's excellent.
Mm-hmm. And then you already talked about the package manager.
Yep.
So, you want to talk about Microsoft 365? Now, I did not see any of that, although I noticed that Satya talked about Power Apps. He talked about Flow. He talked about, you know, so all of this is all kind of blending in together now, at least at the enterprise level.
Right.
Is there was a lot of Microsoft 365 news, though, also for developers, right, at this event. And I'll say one of the most interesting things for me was seeing Rajesh Jha, who heads up Microsoft 365. And also he heads up Surface. I mean, Windows, because especially he's part of his group.
Because honestly, when he comes out of his hole, it's like an early spring.
No, never. Like, he never, ever gives keynotes and never, almost never gives interviews. He's done a few lately, but
it was good.
It was good to see him present. I was like, hey, there he is, you know? so they had lots of team stuff for developers, right? Like new templates and automations and all that kind of stuff, which was good.
I don't remember who said this. Someone on Twitter made this observation, probably someone that we both follow or they follow us or whatever, but... Teams is obviously the biggest Microsoft Office application since OneNote, you know, maybe even beyond that.
Right.
But you know what? It's bigger than that, right? Teams is arguably the biggest Microsoft platform since, I don't know, Office. I mean,
I think it's the fastest growing app since SharePoint was the fastest.
Okay. That's a great example because SharePoint is also a platform. So, this in many ways, I've sort of said, like, you know, Teams is going to evolve into like the new Outlook, you know, Teams is going to evolve into the new Windows, you know, it's like,
they call it an operating system almost.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy watching this thing evolve so quickly, you know?
You know what I'm getting nervous about, and maybe you can talk me off the ledge here.
The SharePoint implication of Teams.
Yes.
Is that what you're worried about?
Yep.
Because you should be worried about it, because that's exactly what I'm worried about.
It reminds me of SharePoint in a lot of ways, because when you try to tell somebody when somebody says to you, what is SharePoint? And you try to explain it, it's like the Swiss Army knife of products. It's everything, right? It does this, it does that, it does this and that. Now, like when somebody says to me, what is Teams? It's not just a group chat application. It's everything, right?
It's a multi-tentacled monster. That's why I almost got shivved that time in Harlem when I made fun of SharePoint without realizing it was a SharePoint audience. But like, it's like.
Not our Harlem in New York. He means
Harlem in Amsterdam.
Light shipping. But my people are taller than I am. I share this fear. It's like that whole ethical thing around AI, like. Yeah, I know we can do it, but should we do it? Like they really are adding an incredible number of features to this thing. Let me give you like just the simplest example.
No, there's an app store in Teams, just inside Teams. Yeah. They have
their own app store, Mary Jo is part of our BWW group or team or whatever it is in Teams, right? So you've seen this. You might recognize what I'm about to say. We just switched to Teams recently. So we had been using Skype for communication and then other tools for other things. Like we use Basecamp for project management, et cetera, et cetera. So in Teams, like, or I should say in Skype, if you're familiar with Skype, you have a list of contacts. You can order them in different ways. You like the most recent contacts at the top. You have favorite contacts, et cetera, et cetera. Well, they have this list, but it's empty, right? You don't see any of your contacts in it. Mm-hmm. So I think Brad did this. It doesn't really matter, but there's a view called Teams, And so he set up a team for each of the Skype groups we used to have. So we have like a Throt Huddle. We have a thing for the podcast. We have one for the group of people who write news on Throt.com. We have several others. But like these things, they don't work like they do work like chats, but they actually hide chats by default. So if you miss out on a stream of conversation, it actually compresses them down so you can't see them. And I was looking at it. I was like, this is really inefficient. Like, it's just everything's hidden, you know? And then I looked over the side and I was like, hey, there's another view called chat. And if you go to chat, you can create groups of people there as well. And I was like, I wonder if that works exactly like Skype. And it does. And I said, we got to get rid of these team things we created and just use chat. And then that's what we've done. But it's just, it's like, I'm sure someone who is like, there'll be a Teams expert out there, just like there's a SharePoint expert out there who is bristling at my characterization of this product. And they'll say, well, Paul, you don't understand. The Teams thing is blah, 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 blah. Yeah, you're right. I don't understand. That's the problem. Like, it's all this extra stuff and it's not really obvious, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Sure. This is why companies rarely will move from one platform to another. It's very hard once they've set on a platform.
Yeah. Right.
It's like playing Call of Duty.
Yeah.
If you picked up Call of Duty today, you'd have no idea what was going on.
Muscle memory.
No.
Yep. I mean, you know, Outlook is like this. SharePoint is like this. Yeah, Teams is definitely trending in that direction.
It is.
Soon there's going to be all these little like Teams front ends where it will just show you the stuff you want to see. It'll be like the three, you know, features you need or whatever.
Lists. Let's talk about
Is that from Wunderlist, the Wunderkind? Or is it something completely different?
Nope.
it's worse, I think. And it should be from Wunderlist.
Yeah, because
you know where it's from, Paul?
I do know, and that's what's wrong with it.
It's from SharePoint.
So this is a new Microsoft 365 app, like, one of several.
You're like Microsoft. I need to drive through the drive up of McDonald's. What vehicle should I use? Oh, take the airship, the aircraft carrier over here.
Yeah, it's like to-do lists were too simple. So,
you know what people say, which this doesn't make sense to me, but maybe it makes sense to you guys. They say to do. That's like for personal like things that you need to do for yourself. But lists is a whole different thing, right? Lists is more like for businesses but bigger than that, right? Like it's more about
towards that. Email is something that I do for both business and for personal. So why can't there be a business version of to-do that supports teams of people?
I know. I didn't know there was another product like this, but I've heard from these people about 10 times so far this week. Yeah. Airtable.
Yes.
There's a company called Airtable.
I know Airtable very well. Yeah, this looks a little like Airtable.
Okay, so Lists is like Airtable.
Yeah.
And so with Lists, you'll do things like issue tracking, status reporting. So it's not something you would do in to-do, right?
It's project managers that are like this. This is not an uncommon.
But here's the problem. Microsoft has another product called Planner.
Right.
Which is for businesses, right? Planner. Nice.
They have way too many of the same things. This is a huge Microsoft problem.
I know.
It's like the Google Communications apps, you know? How many messaging apps do you guys need?
I know. I feel like the way Google has so many messaging apps is how Microsoft has too many tasks and notes apps.
Yeah.
They have too many.
Yep.
They have OneNote. They have things in Outlook, like Outlook tasks. Then they have Teams. Like now we have Teams with this new list thing, the integration between those two. We've got Planner. I mean, there's a million different things that you could use.
So we have this later in the list, they're adding, Microsoft added a feature called Collections to Microsoft Edge. And my reaction to that is you already have things that make lists of things. Why would you make another thing that makes lists of things? Like it could have just been the view of a OneNote notebook, you know? That's what it should be. You already have OneNote. Just do that. And one of the features they're adding this year? OneNote integration. So your collections will sync to a notebook in OneNote. Right.
Yeah.
Like that's what it should have been from the first.
I know.
They love making lists over there.
Microsoft's idea is, you know what? We don't want to just give you one tool for a job. We want to give you a choice of tools for your job. So you can pick the best tool for the job. That works to a point, but then it starts getting confusing. It does.
Yeah, because I think what people say is, you know what the best tool for the job is? Whatever Google's doing, because I'm getting tired of this crap. Like, this is too much of this stuff.
Well, even Google does it in a variety. No, there's something about to-do lists that they proliferate. And it's my theory that instead of getting things done, people want to make systems around getting things done so they can procrastinate actually getting things done.
Actually, Leo, the best thing to do is after you've made your system, what you do is you write a book or a blog about it.
Yes.
And then you can explain to other people how they can make their own system. And in this way, nothing ever gets done. We just constantly talk about getting things.
Throw sticky notes in there too, because now they're adding all these capabilities to sticky notes that you could use them as a list or a to-do thing, right? You could.
By the way, also syncs to a OneNote notebook, if I'm not mistaken, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sticky notes.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Anywho, so we have lists. That's fun.
It's new.
We need a countdown clock to like Microsoft brands that we know are not going to be around in a year or two. And I think I would put this one on the list.
You would?
See what I did?
No, you know what? I wonder how the battle between to-do and lists is going to play out. Because, you know, anything that comes from SharePoint, I think it's probably going to stick around.
Poison? Oh, I see.
No, I think that's the people are just used to the idea of SharePoint lists. So when you add something and it's called lists, if you're a SharePoint administrator, you're like, I understand what this
SharePoint
is.
SharePoint is like saying, I live in the Matrix and I woke up and I see that I'm in a vat of liquid and connected to a giant computer. And I don't care. I'm going back to sleep.
Don't get the SharePoint community mad at you, Paul. You're going to really regret it. I have a regret for that.
But yeah.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Okay. Lists. There you go.
Lists. You know, different strokes for different folks.
I know. I wish there was like a giant chart, because I like charts. I want to see a chart with all their to-do and note-taking things and say, here's what you use this for, here's what you use this for. Yeah, a list of lists.
Which Microsoft app would you use?
We'll get right on that. Let's use Sway to do it. What do you say?
Let's use Sway.
Oh, Sway. Now we got the fluid flamework. What is the fluid flamework?
This is that DDE/Olay for the web thing.
Yeah. We've talked about it before, but now they really are. They had demoed it a year or two ago, I remember.
Yeah.
Last one.
Yep.
Last build,
remember?
It was build. And we came away from it. We were like, what is this thing? Because one thing, it was two different things, right? It was super fast co-authoring, but it was also almost like Olay, like embedding charts and tables and graphs inside your application so that when they're updated, they update everywhere simultaneously and you're always in sync. So I'm like, what do these two things have to do with each other? But now we see what they have to do with each other, right?
Absolutely nothing. Oh, sorry.
They do. Because if you didn't have the fast collaboration technology, you couldn't have the automatic syncing happen with all these components that are embedded inside your documents.
Yeah, I think where this gets interesting is when it becomes something that's a feature and apps you're already using, right?
Right. So they're going to start letting people see how this would look in Outlook for the web and Office.com. They're going to start previewing it with enterprise and education users first, and they're going to say, okay, we're going to show you examples of how this would work for you through fluid components and fluid workspaces. And if you're a third-party developer, you can start playing around with this too and see what it would look like to have these components be able to be embedded in your applications also.
Yeah, because actually now that I think about it, I think it must have been right after Ignite last year, there was a preview of this. And what it seemed like was like a markdown editor in the web. And you could work on it, you know, collaboratively with other people. And I was thinking like, this is another way to make a list. Actually, that was one of the things it did. Kind of a light version of OneNote almost, you know? I think the ability, this is, you know, back in 1995, the big deal was you could embed an Excel spreadsheet in a Word document. And when you clicked in there, you got the full power of Excel. And that kind of thing is part of this. Hopefully it's safer. You know, because there were certainly problems with that, especially with ActiveX and whatnot. But Yeah. I mean, so I, yeah, it seems, and the plus they're open sourcing it.
Right. Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So that's all goodness. More open source.
Yeah. No, that seems good.
Yep. And then the other Microsoft 365 thing is Project Cortex, right, which is Microsoft's knowledge repository / network service that's coming. So this is very interesting to me because of all the Microsoft products that have been pushed back and delayed and kind of put on hold, Project Cortex is full steam ahead and they're coming out early this summer. That was their original projection for this. And this is a very ambitious service, right? It integrates Microsoft Search, which is that new unified search, the Microsoft Graph, and all your Office applications so that if you have information on people or documents or meetings, when you're inside existing Microsoft Office apps, the context is just going to bubble up in contact cards and things like that. So it's pulling together.
Basically, right?
Stuff.
So for the internet age.
Exactly. Yep. Metadata tagging, that'll happen automatically. And it's coming very soon. It's in private preview right now with 75 companies, and they're going to go right from private preview to general availability. And it's going to be a premium Microsoft 365 service. We don't know how it's going to exactly be priced or licensed at this point.
Is it public and private in the sense, not the program, but the product itself? Like, in other words, it will bubble up data within your organization.
Yes.
So if there's the name of someone in a report or something, you can hover over and it, you know, gives you their bio and all that stuff. But it's also public, so it's both.
Yeah. So you have to opt in if you're a company to say, okay, we want our corporate data to be basically accessed via an intranet, right? And
you'd
data.
Authenticate into it. Yep.
Exactly. So it's not just suddenly going to be putting your company information out in the public view, right? It's going to be something locked down, right? Yeah.
I mean, if it works right, you could have people outside the company look at the same document and not see the same information, right? I mean,
even inside your company, right. Like if I have different permissions than you do to see more reports or whatever, I'd see them, but you wouldn't see them if everything works as planned. So, yeah. I know this. I'm just surprised this is still on time and on track and moving forward. At Build, they talked about new developer tools for Cortex and new developer experiences so that people can start working with the data and seeing how the graph fits in and the search fits in and how connectors will let you bring in external content and have that also be indexed and connected into. So, yeah, they're going full steam ahead.
Right. Cool.
Yep.
Credge. Did they talk about that at all? I wish I could have seen more of this, you know, because I had to tune out after and go to work. But it looks like there was a lot more. So they did. Did they have a session? A Credge session?
Yes.
Wow.
They did, right? Yeah.
Yep.
So for me, the biggest thing is Credge is finally going to start rolling out to mainstream users. I mean, it's already available to people who are seekers, right? You can go and get it, the new Edge. But it hasn't started rolling out through Windows Update and automatic updates to existing Windows 10 users yet. And they said that's going to happen in the next few weeks. So that's new that they actually gave a time frame for this to happen. And it'll happen in a staggered way so that people will start getting it. I think it's good, though, because we know that the tires have been kicked. It's been out since January for people who are seekers. And if you're an enterprise or an education user, you won't have it automatically pushed to you. But everybody else, you're going to start seeing it show up through Windows Update in the next few weeks. So that's good. What else do they say about it?
So there's actually some PWA news around Edge that I thought was kind of interesting. I haven't tried this yet, so I can only go by their description of it. But if you get the Canary version of Microsoft Edge today running on Windows Insider, I assume fast. I don't know if it has to be on fast or not, but some Windows Insider build anyway. You'll have a new experience when you install PWAs on Windows 10 that make them look more like native apps than even they do today, although they look pretty good today, I think. But they'll also appear in the start menu as installed apps and on the taskbar automatically, et cetera. So that's kind of a nice, you know, bit of integration there, which I think makes sense.
And then they also talked about, I don't think they had talked about sidebar search before, right?
From IE5 or whatever that was.
Oh, yeah, the sidebar, right?
Yeah. Those things, like it was a sidebar. Of kind of,
But this new sidebar search is if you're browsing and you highlight a word or a phrase and you right-click on it and select from the menu, search in sidebar, you'll have a pane come up along the side and let you have the results of that search. And the idea is it's kind of like staying in your flow, right? Instead of having to open another tab and do a search separately. I don't know. I might use this.
Not a new tab. So in other words, you don't have to keep task switching between the tabs.
Yeah. No. Right. Yeah. So your results are right there, right? I don't know. I might use it. I want to try it. Yeah. And if you're a business and you're signed in with Azure Active Directory, you'll get work results too. So we're starting to see this whole thing with this Microsoft Search and the graph where more and more business data for people who want to be signed in will start surfacing up through their browser, through Bing, right? And all the different search mechanisms that Microsoft's building into their apps. So this is starting to finally make sense what they were trying to do when they came out with the unified Microsoft Search.
Yeah, and it will context shift.
I'm glad they made it opt-in, though, because at one point they were going to try to force that on people, Bing-jacking, as we called it at the time, I believe. But they're not. They're not doing that now. So it's more of an opt-in.
Did you mention the biggest feature, the Pinterest integration, as I call it?
Right. Pinterest is being integrated with collections. Just for Paul.
I'm interested in this.
Right. So collections, you know, that feature that's in Credge already that lets you kind of save a set of things to the side in a sidebar. They're integrating it with Pinterest so that if you have a set of things saved in collections that you want to export to your Pinterest board, which I'm sure Paul has several Pinterest boards, he would be able to do this. I have no idea. I know. See, I knew it. I knew it. No idea. You're a secret Pinterest user. I knew it.
Right. Yeah, Scott Goo collects stamps, and I'm a Pinterest fan.
Oh, did he talk about his stamp collection?
No, yeah, we didn't talk about that.
He did. I mean, like I said, you know, you get like this view into people's houses, so. Scott Goo is sitting in front of this massive wall of what looks like hardcover books, all with nothing on the spine. Like they're just almost like photo albums or something. And so he was answering questions. And one of the questions that was asked of him are, what are all those books? like you'd see like a law library or a lawyer's office.
Oh, and it was his like stamps?
It was stamp collections. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Do you think he's still active? Or is he that for me to be pretty, a teenager?
No, those look pretty nice and new.
I think he's still doing it. Yeah. He did an AMA at Build through the virtual Build.
I'm sorry. Yeah. That's where this came up.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So he wasn't an adolescent numismatist. He's a full grown numismatist. Okay.
I used to collect stamps as a youth. I loved collecting stamps. Yes.
Oh, that's neat. Because you get the whole world, and you must have had a relative who sent you mail from foreign lands.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And I used to buy stamps in those little glassine envelopes. Yeah. The part I liked the most was seeing where they were from and like learning about countries. I feel like that's why I like to travel, really, because of stamps.
Because of stamps. So you never have
really?
To do that
I'm
again?
I'm not kidding.
No, that makes sense. In fact, I think when I was a kid, I tried to collect. I thought, I should see if this is a good hobby. And I tried it. And you get those little glue hinges that you put the stamp.
Sure.
And then you have tweezers and a magnifying. Then you put.
You're not supposed to touch your stamps because then you get your oils of the your oils. Finger on the stamps.
Right.
Yeah, this is interesting for about 7 minutes.
That's what happened to me. It's like I did three stamps.
And then you look over and you see the basketball in the corner and you're like, you know what?
Yeah, that's exactly. It didn't. But I think it's good when you're a kid to try a lot of stuff because you don't know what's going to take. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
I had a lot of weird hobbies.
You can single out the nerds later in life.
Yeah.
Exactly. I used to also collect rocks too. So the nerdishness is right here.
I couldn't do that because my father was a geologist. He was collecting rocks already. Oh. So I had to
and you were never going to outdo him.
Never going to outdo the geologist. Yeah. No. No. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's important we all have hobbies.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does sound like I don't know. It sounds like a Perry Mason episode. The Adolescent Numismatist. The case.
It's like a Hardy Boys book.
Oh, that's it. The case of the adolescent.
Yeah, the case of the. Yeah, exactly.
So Microsoft has the fifth fastest supercomputer in the world.
They also have the fifth most popular video game console.
They also have the number one best-selling PC game of all time.
Wow.
Oh, Minecraft.
Minecraft. What did they say? 100 million?
200 million.
200 million units sold? Sold.
Yeah. Sold. Yeah.
Sold.
That's I think 124 something million active users at any given time.
I got four. Like I got five servers running right over there right now. So am I an active user? I guess so.
I think you are. You're very active.
Very active. Hyperactive.
Granted, this is like marrying rich and claiming that you were a lifelong success story.
It's
you
true.
Know, they bought this company.
But they spent some money getting it.
Yeah.
Paid off. Probably the best acquisition they ever made.
It's one of the best. It worked out better than that Nokia thing.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah, but the supercomputer thing is really interesting to me. So when you hear Microsoft built the fifth most performant recorded supercomputer. Why?
Right.
Why did they and how and why, right? So if you remember about a year ago, they made a $1 billion investment in OpenAI. OpenAI is that company that was founded by Elon Musk and Sam Altman. And they're doing all kinds of interesting research in very general purpose AI. So Microsoft invested $1 billion. They committed to using Azure. And they also said at the time, we also are going to help them with supercomputing capabilities. But that's all they really said. So what turns out what Microsoft did was they worked with OpenAI and they built this giant supercomputer. It's not for sale for anyone else. It's only for OpenAI. It's only for Elon Musk now. He's no longer part of that whole thing, which is good. But what Microsoft gets out of this, because they built this, they're giving it to OpenAI. But Microsoft learned a lot about using Azure in really high performance scenarios by building this, right? So they developed all this new clustering capability. They learned what it means to run AI models at a super gigantic scale. And that ability, running AI models on a giant supercomputer, has helped them, they say, benefits that trickle down to products like Office. They say the AI that you're seeing in Office has been improved because of these super large data sets and models that they were able to work on the supercomputer. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are like, okay, so can I buy this? No, you can't. Can I rent the supercomputer? Nope. You can't use it.
Brag about it.
I know. So it's kind of like you're getting indirect benefits from Microsoft's work on the supercomputer is the way I think about it. But you can't actually use it yourself. Sorry.
Well, I guess we all benefit indirectly from those trickle-down features and stuff, I guess.
Exactly.
probably in Bing and wherever else.
Yeah. They talked a lot about this today at Build. They had a whole session about their keynote today was about futuristic technologies, and a lot of it was about the supercomputer and the Turing models and kind of how they're thinking
translations
about
it.
Yeah.
This was Kevin Scott.
Yeah. Kevin Scott, who's the CTO.
Yeah.
Kevin Scott and friends, as it says on the old invitation.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's all there is about the supercomputer. Nothing else.
Yeah. It's more like to impress people.
It is.
Have them over the house. You say, yeah, over there.
Exactly.
That's a supercomputer.
You're like, see this? Here's my stamp collection. Here's my supercomputer. I have both.
HoloLens 2. Did they do any HoloLens stuff?
Not really. They just had a couple of announcements. It's going to be available in more, countries. And it's coming to new parts of Europe, Scandinavia, and Asia. And they're adding 5G capabilities to it, which is kind of interesting because I could see this benefiting from that via some kind of a plug-in module. I assume the LTE is done that way. Maybe you just swap and replace kind of a thing. That's about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little light on the HoloLens data.
Isn't there a HoloLens couple days or some HoloLens event at the end of this week? Alt VR, something.
There could be. Remember, that was supposed to be the weekend before Build, so people would come out early. Right. Yeah, it was going to be a live event. Yeah, so maybe that's they rescheduled it for a virtual thing, I guess.
So maybe in the next couple days there'll be more. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be.
And finally, Visual Studio.
Yeah, so Visual Studio is kind of all over Build, obviously, and I mentioned earlier that you need to use the latest developer preview version of Visual Studio 2019. I don't remember the version number, 16.7 or something. If you want to do the WinUI / project reunion stuff, it's been a lot of Visual Studio code at this show. And, you know, again, speaking to that kind of Linux, Unix type workflow stuff, a lot of web developers like to use that tool. But yeah, so the big news, I guess, is this live share feature, which is available in both versions of Visual Studio. Well, I guess there are three technically, but let's say both versions, Visual Studio proper and Visual Studio Code, which allows users to collaborate in code in real time. I could see the use of this. I spend a lot of time not collaborating with Mary Jo in OneNote because when we try to type together, it doesn't work very well. I don't know. Last night, you know, Raphael spent time on Skype chatting while we were both in our own Visual Studio windows doing the same thing, basically. I could see doing that through Visual Studio Live Share, but
If you could talk while you were working together.
Yeah, of course. Right? Oh, yeah.
I think that would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, so that's what that is. I don't know.
More collaboration things from Microsoft.
Every time I hear it, live collaboration, it's one of those things that sounds so great. And then my experiences with it have been so bad.
Yeah, there are people. There are people who do pair programming. And I think now with people working from home, because you can't, go, hey, Joe, what was that? Show me that trick you used. You can now do the pair programming. And I think that just makes sense. You know, I think that's where that comes from. Take a break and then the back of the book. Did we get everything?
No, I mean, honestly, there's a lot more, but
those are the highlights.
A lot of the stuff, right?
Yeah. Like I mentioned very briefly that Maui thing. I think after this show is over, I'm going to go and try to learn more about that. I just haven't had time.
Yeah.
You know, it's been really, really feature packed.
It has been. It's been great. Now, everything will be available online for viewing forever?
Yep.
So on the Microsoft YouTube channel? Or where do they put that?
Yeah, probably there in Channel 9, I would imagine.
In Channel 9,
Nice. But, definitely on YouTube.
So have to say, so maybe they could have an event where it's a social thing, completely separate. And then they could do a lot of the content online like this, because I thought it worked really well. And, the time constraints made it better, I thought.
I think there's a real future in not charging people to watch it virtually.
Yep.
Charging them whatever makes sense to have them be there in person, because that will be valuable.
That's the value.
Obviously international and whatever, but you can imagine just individual companies to say, look, we're going to send a C-level guy and a couple of our engineers to the show, but we want you other folks to watch online.
Yeah.
Live or not, whatever, the sessions that make sense for you.
We're going to see something like that, I think.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Sure. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. That's a shame. Google called off Google I.O. last week because that,
I don't know why they did that.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Apple's going to do their developer conference next month. That's going to be streaming as well. And the problem, I don't know about Build, but certainly the problem with Google I.O. And Apple is there aren't enough seats for all the people who want to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not even close. Yep. Yeah. They have to have lotteries and stuff to let people in. So this, it just seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
All right. Back of the book coming up. But first, a word from our sponsor, the great folks at IT Pro TV. We are fans. We are friends. We even went out when they opened their brand new studios in Gainesville, Florida. Man, that is a, you know, they started out, they were just, you know, it was Tim and Don, and they were a couple of IT trainers. They used to do, you know, traditional classroom, you know, test prep and stuff like that for the IT certs. And they were fans of Tech TV. They saw what we did with Twit, and they said, we should do that. So they built, you know, a studio, and they started streaming like we do, started streaming, you know, content to help you get the cert to get a better job in IT or your first job in IT. And but it went so well. And, of course, they were smart. They bought ads on Twit because it went so well. They now have like five studios running live all the time, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. They have thousands of hours, I think 4,000 of hours of content. And because they're always making more, it's always fresh with the latest technologies. It is really great. If you're interested in a career in IT, IT Pro TV has become really a full-service place, not just a place you can go and watch these amazing videos. And by the way, it's on Apple TV, it's on Roku, it's on your computer, your phone, everywhere. You can. They also now have learning coaches who will help you. And this is great. I want to do this for our son. Just, you know, he'll be a high school senior next year. He loves tech. He'd be great in IT. The learning coaches help you navigate the IT career roadmap. They'll help you find, because there's more than just, you know, security and help building computers and setting up networks. I mean, it's an infinite category. So they'll help you find the perfect career that's right for you. Sign up for a premium membership. Let an expert guide you. You'll start by setting goals. Your coach will work with you to implement an IT training program that helps you reach the goals that you want. And their extensive IT career paths library can assist you in learning more about the different careers to help you pick the one that's right for you. You probably don't even know. I don't know all the possibilities. From entry-level IT to cybersecurity, you can learn the ins and outs of all of them as a jumping-off point. So you'll understand what you'll be doing, how much you'll, you know, how much you'll have the potential to make, how well they pay, things like that. And you can also, I guarantee you, find an IT career that is, you know, recession proof. That is, you know, I mean, there's these jobs, you know, our IT guys working more than ever before. Once your training is complete, IT Pro TV takes it a step further, helps you get the, you know, build the career of your dreams, find that first job and move on. IT Pro TV also has a learning coach for Teams Engage. For their Teams thing, engage and grow the skills base of your team members through a corporate premium membership. So I like that too. You know, you may be managing an IT team, but I don't know if you have the time or the skills to lead them in the right directions. IT Pro TV can do that too for you. There are 4,000 hours of IT training. They're the official video training partner for CompTIA. So those are the really the most sought after fundamental certs, the A plus, the Network plus, the Security plus. Kevin Rose told me the way he got his first job at Tech TV was he was A plus certified. So he came in, he could do the IT. So what happened to Kevin Rose? He did all right. Kid did all right for himself. They have 12 CompTIA on-demand courses in every area. Now's a great time to maximize your personal potential and the potential of your team. Help that team get the certs they need to become successful, and everybody wins. Let IT Pro TV guide you into the IT career that's best for you. Go to itpro.tv/windows. The code WW30 will get you 30% off all consumer subscriptions as long as you stay active forever, if you stay active. And I think you will, because there's always more to learn. WW30, don't forget that. itpro.tv/windows. Offer code WW30 for 30% off of the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, this is a great way. The way to build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thank you, IT Pro TV, for all the great work you've done. I know many of our viewers and listeners are big fans or customers, and they're working in IT now, thanks to IT Pro TV. Let's start with Paul Thurrott as we go to the back of the book and his tip of the week.
Yeah, so, you know, if you go to a conference, you always get like a bag of swag, and you can pick up additional swag as you walk around the conference hall or whatever. Obviously,
yeah, we don't have that swag this year. Bag?
So, Microsoft has some digital swag to give out, which, you know, is like headers for Twitter, desktop wallpapers. Yes, I would get up, of course.
Oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this is smart of them.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, look at that. All these digital assets you could use. Mm-hmm. Watch faces.
Yep.
For which watch?
Apple, I think, right?
That's a good question.
You can't put your own watch on Apple. No. It must be.
No.
They're like build Lego things in kind of a square size.
Yeah.
The terminal. Yeah. It must be for Android Wear. Or you can do this with Fitbits, too. That'd be fun to have a command line on your watch. That'd make people silly. Oh, this is great. Digital swag. It's on GitHub. Nice.
Yeah.
You can even have your crazy terminal banners.
Now, Mary Jo, you might know this better than I do, but people who signed up for Build, did everyone get like a swag set in an email, or was that just certain people?
So a lot of people who signed up got physical swag, like they got socks and stickers and a lunchbox, right?
Okay. Yeah, but there was an email thing that I couldn't find.
Apple Watch faces from Kayla Cinnamon. I don't know how she's getting them on her Apple Watch.
The press got a bunch of separate swag, digital swag, that was emailed to us. But I don't know if everybody who went to Build also got that, too.
Because it was like, you know, donations to the different charities and...
Right.
Starbucks gift card, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know,
nice.
That might have just been for the press. An analyst, maybe.
Yeah, don't tell us about it. Don't get us all jealous. That's no good.
Man. Well, I mean, it was just, you know, mostly it was just, you know, nice.
Yeah, just like little giveaway things.
Stuff we don't all get.
It's not like I got a Surface Studio in the mail or anything, but, you know, thanks.
Now, we were sitting here, Micah and I are sitting here, and Scott Hanselman mentions Power Toys. And Micah says, "What's Power Toys?" And I said, that's a long time ago. Do they still have them? I guess they do.
You know, honestly, when they first announced Power Toys, I was like, I don't get, like the first couple they announced, I was like, this isn't very good. But actually, Power Toys has evolved into something pretty cool. And this is something everyone listening or watching this should check
this
out.
This is a Power Toys reboot, I guess, because it's 0.81.
Yeah. So they just released that. That version is the first to include Power Toys Run, which is actually my favorite Power Toy.
But I already do that. I mean, how is that different from hitting the Windows key and typing what you want to do?
Well, if you're familiar with the way the Mac works, I think it's Command Space.
Command Space, yeah.
Spotlight.
Yeah.
So this works the same way, but it's Alt Space. And what it does is it puts the search bar in the middle of the screen, which is kind of...
No, it's nice.
You know, it looks a lot like... Spotlight search, frankly. So what's the difference? This is only for applications, and it has the visual look and feel of Spotlight search. But there are a bunch of other useful utilities, like fancy zones for creating window layouts, so you can lay out things the way you want, use hotkeys to move them around. There's a couple of minor file explorer features that's not very useful. Like an image resizer, which is kind of a modern version of an original Power Toy, which is super useful. Keyboard manager, where you can literally change any keyboard shortcuts or remap keys to be what you want them to be, which is really neat. Power rename. And then the shortcut guide, which I actually turned off because it comes on by mistake and it makes me crazy. I don't need it. But it brings up a help overlay with all of the Windows shortcuts for when you use the Windows key.
That's nice to have. I think this is fun.
It's a great set. Yeah. It really is. And check it out.
And presumably they'll keep updating it.
Yeah, they've been adding new toys over time. And like I said, like the Power Toys Run one to me is like the cool one. Because that's one of the things I really like on the Mac. And it's just, it just looks nice. It's nice.
It's nice. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Enterprise Pick of the Week.
So we I think we've talked on Windows Weekly before about Microsoft Learn, which is their new learning channel where you can get all kinds of content for upskilling and learning new skills. Now they've got a thing they've put out in preview this week called Learn TV. And Learn TV is going to be 1 hour of technical content made available for free every day. And it's going to have things like live streams and shows, instructional videos. It's targeted at both developers and IT pros. And you could just go to the Learn TV site and watch it. There's no catch. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to pay. They're going to cover a lot of different topics. And I think they're going to include some of the content from Build there just so you have another place to watch it and look for it. It's not a complete duplicate of what they're doing with Channel 9. It's not a replacement for Channel 9. It's more like instructor-led sessions and live presentations and that kind of thing. So right now, it is in preview as of this week. And if you go to docs.microsoft.com and you look for Learn, you'll see a sublink for Learn TV.
Cool. Nice. Is it free?
It's free.
Free. Nice.
Free. Yep.
And the code name pick of the week.
Okay. This is a backstory on the supercomputer story.
So
the code name pick of the week is Odyssey. And I found out maybe 4 or 5 months ago that Microsoft was working on a supercomputer. And I never could quite nail the story. I kept searching for it and asking people. I knew people who were working on the project. And I was like, oh, I know they're building a supercomputer, but I don't know how or why or where. And then I looked in the Microsoft Career site and I did a search on the word supercomputer and Odyssey came up. And so there's a job listing for somebody who is the central point of contact in Azure for work with OpenAI on a supercomputer. And I'm like, there it is. They're building the supercomputer for OpenAI. And the most interesting thing to me about this job posting is it talks about some of the hardware that Microsoft is using when they're building this supercomputer. So they are working with a bunch of partners, as you would expect, to build this giant fifth most performance supercomputer. They're working with Cray, HPE, Mellanox, and NVIDIA on this. They said at Build, this supercomputer has 285,000 CPU cores, 10,000 GPUs, and 400 gigabits per second network connectivity for each GPU server. Ooh. It's big.
Big numbers.
So I believe the code name for this project is Odyssey, based on my work, my little sleuthing work. And why they called it Odyssey, I'm not sure. But
well, that's obvious. It's named after the Magnavox game.
Casey Munchkin, that not Pac-Man ripoff from 1979.
Not quite as sophisticated, but still a pretty supercomputer for an 8-year-old.
Yep. Yeah, that must be it, right?
That must be. Why don't we do some beer?
The beer pick, it's now that it's summer, spring/summer, even though you wouldn't know it because we're all still inside. It's time for some sour and wild ales. And so I had a really awesome one.
Sour wild ales.
Sour and wild ales. I had one this past week called Starship. It's from Finback Brewing in Brooklyn. It's a raspberry sour with grapefruit zest. And that gives it this really nice, sweet and sour combination. It's bright pink when you pour it into your glass, so it's really beautiful. And it tasted like fresh raspberries in a glass, pretty much.
Nice.
The other good thing was it was only 4.6%, so it's a nice, like, summer rooftop refresher kind of beer. And if you know, Finback's kind of hard to find in places outside of this geographic area, but so many beer makers make really nice sours right now, and this is the perfect season to start drinking them.
I agree.
Would you say it built this city?
I would say that. I would.
A little play on Starship. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. So from Finback Brewer, Starship Sour. We're in the season of sours.
We are.
Yep.
We're all sour at this season, I would say.
Well, that concludes our special Build 2020 edition of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, thank you. You can go back to watching your videos now. Paul's at Thurrott.com. Yeah. I'm sure both of you have filed a lot of stories about all the things.
It's been a little busy this week. Yep.
Thurrott.com. Mary Jo at AllAboutMicrosoft.com. Paul's field guide to Windows 10 being updated right now for 2004.
And Linux.
And, oh, yeah, Paul's going to have a whole chapter on how to use Linux, how to install Linux, how to run Linux, then how to delete Linux.
I would appreciate it if you wouldn't delight in this so much. but yes.
She cackles. Am I cackling? Yes, I am.
Cackle.
Do I hear cackle? In the background.
That's leanpub.com to get that field guide to Windows 10. And we do this show, let's see, every, I think it's a Wednesday, middle of the week, around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1700 UTC. You can watch us do it live at twit.tv/live. Audio and video streams are there. If you're doing that, the chat room beckons. Actually, they're there 24/7, which is nice. So if you get a little lonely, you can get some geek companionship at irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. We also have on-demand versions at our website, twit.tv/ww on YouTube. You can ask your Amazon Echo or your Google device to play the Windows Weekly podcast. It will. You can also subscribe in your favorite podcast client, and that way you'll get it automatically. Because unlike Joe Rogan, we're still on RSS. Of course, we don't have hundreds of millions of dollars either, but, you know, hey. Yeah,
but we're also interesting.
We're also interesting. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a great week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we will see you next week on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, folks, I am Micah Sargent, co-host of Tech News Weekly right here on the Twit Network. Yes, Tech News Weekly is a show we do every week, Jason Howell and myself, where we talk to people who are making and a breaking the tech news. That's right. It's journalists, it's inventors, it's app makers, it's everybody who's bringing the tech news in a given week. It's all the stuff you want to know about in bite-sized chunks in a fantastic package. So be sure to subscribe. It's twit.tv/TNW.